We're back, and this is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and I'm the host of the show and also chairman of the board and founder of Mage LLC, management consulting firm. That's my day job, we hope. And I want to thank our friends over at The Social Scene, who are hosting us again for the summer. We're pretty excited about The Social Scene. If you're interested in organizing your social life, take a look online. Just type in The Social Scene or socialscene.me. Every week we like to speak with Mark Furman. I think everyone knows that. Business reporter, litigation, business. Welcome back, Mark, from the law firm, of Tarlow, Breed, Hart & Rogers. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Jeff. Great to be with you.
Great to be with you, too. Mark, what's the topic today?
Well, I wanted to talk about when unsigned settlement agreements become enforceable agreements.
Oh, wow.
It involves a case that we've talked about before involving the taxi industry in the city of Boston, and a class action lawsuit was brought trying to have the courts determine that drivers of taxis in Boston were misclassified as independent contractors and that they were really employees, and as a result there was a tremendous amount of liability on the part of medallion owners who leased their cabs to the taxi drivers. You may recall that there was an attachment of $700 million originally entered against one of the defendants. The defendants ultimately moved for summary judgment. The Superior Court denied it, and in 2015, the Supreme Judicial Court reversed, ruling that the defendants had not misclassified the drivers as independent contractors. However, there were a few minor claims left in the case that weren't decided by the Supreme Court. And so when the case was remanded back to the Superior Court, the defendants moved to dismiss, and then there were some settlement discussions between plaintiff's counsel and counsel for the defendants. And the settlement discussions were largely through emails, and at one point the defendants, the plaintiff's counsel said, "We're in touch now with everyone and think they are all ready to sign." That was on December 8, 2015. So the defendants then drafted a settlement agreement incorporating the terms, which basically was each driver would get $2,000, each of the named drivers. I think there were a total of five drivers in two cases. And then shortly thereafter, one of the drivers said he didn't want to sign. And this is after the defendants had wire transferred the settlement funds to the client trust account of the plaintiff's lawyer, because he didn't like the fact that there was a general release and he had some other claim relating to an alleged assault that he didn't want to release. So then two of the drivers signed. The other ones refused to sign. The one who wanted this exception as released refused to sign. So there ended up being a dispute with the $10,000 in repro account of the plaintiff's attorney, and the defendants moved to enforce the settlement agreement. And the court found it was enforceable. But when the plaintiff's counsel wrote, "We're in touch now with everyone and think they're all ready to sign," where there had been an agreement agreement as to how much would be paid, that there is an enforceable settlement agreement. Now, a settlement agreement is, it's just another type of contract. And so there has to be a meeting of the minds, and you have to agree on the material terms. But here you have the negotiations through a lawyer, not uncommon, and the lawyer's holding herself out as authorized to negotiate a settlement agreement, and she was, the court found, authorized to enter into the agreement, communicate that she was ready to sign the agreement, that all the plaintiffs had been lined up and were ready to go, and the court concluded she had legal authority to settle the case, and the settlement was enforceable, even though some of the plaintiffs had not signed the agreement. So even though the negotiations contemplated that a settlement agreement would be signed, the fact that the plaintiffs had not signed it was irrelevant. There was an agreement. The document to be executed was a mere formality. The essential terms had been agreed upon, and case over. With or without the plaintiff's signature, the release is in effect as to all the plaintiffs. With or without their signature, the settlement proceeds have been paid by the defendant. Case over. That simple. So I think there's a couple of things that are important to note, I think, here. One is, you know, when you're, sometimes agreements can be pieced together from emails, from text messages.
Oh, that's interesting.
From oral communication. It doesn't have to be in writing. Don't assume that every agreement is unenforceable just because you haven't signed it. When you reach a point that all the material terms have been agreed upon, some agreements will be enforced no matter what. Secondly, when you settle cases, it's always important to think about what other business you have with the opposing party that you're settling this dispute with. Because there's two types of releases. One is a general release that releases all claims, known or unknown, from the beginning of the world till now. It covers everything. So if you have other business, make sure it's carved out from the release. In that circumstance where you've got other business, you want the release to be limited to the claim you're settling. You don't want it to pick up everything else from the beginning of the world to now. So that's something that sometimes gets overlooked in the rush to get the deal closed. Don't rush. Think about what your other relationships are. Make sure you figure out, with the help of your lawyer, whether you need a limited release instead of a general release. And sometimes the language of releases get very heavily negotiated to make sure there's a clear meeting of the minds as to what claims survive the signing of the settlement agreement. So here the plaintiffs didn't have much success in the case. They lost the main claim, and the attempt to have the settlement agreement declared unenforceable didn't work either. That's the end of that case.
You know what I think is very interesting, Mark, and you were very good at pointing it out. And the way I heard it was, if you've demonstrated intention through texts or communication, that's good enough to enforce an agreement. That basically, if you've started to act that way and imply that that's the way you're going, that that's the way it is.
certain types of risk have to be in writing, but cases are starting to come down where text messages are a sufficient writing. Email messages are a sufficient writing, even if they don't, even if they're, you know, they're unsigned, but, you know, a text or email that says, I agree, is a writing that's sufficient for that group of agreements that requires a agreement signed by the party against whom you're trying to enforce the agreement. We'll talk a little bit more another time about, you know, what agreements have to be signed, what agreements don't have to be signed, but here, you know, whether or not in the taxi case, you know, these emails are sufficient to create the contract and enforce it, settling the case.
You know, the other point you bring up before you go, which I think is good, I probably see on a daily basis how people feel the need to rush to do something and how every day it gets them in trouble. I see it with people running organizations, doing deals, wanting to do deals faster, make decisions about employees, make decisions about bosses. This whole concept of time and rushing gets mismanaged by almost everyone.
Well, I can't tell you how many cases have come across my desk over the years have resulted from, I think, the rush to get deals closed. And, you know, it's like a giant puzzle, and you got to make sure the pieces fit to make sure everybody's expectations are met, because unmet expectations creates litigation, and miscommunication creates litigation. So you gotta, and releases are of critical importance when you're settling a case.
Well, I'd like to I'd like to talk one day about releases. That's a subject I don't think we've really focused on, and I think would be a good focus for us to talk to entrepreneurs about. I don't see a lot of people getting releases on things, so I would like to cover that in another segment, if that's okay.
Sure.
Good. If somebody wants to get hold of you and learn more about the contracts and you know, contact you with Tarlo Breed, Hart & Rogers, how would they do that?
I can be reached at 617-218-2025 or M. Furman, Furman, at tbhr-law.com.
Thank you very much, Mark. Always a pleasure having you on the show, teaching us all a lot about how to run a business successfully and stay out of trouble. I hope you have a great week.
Thank you.
That was Mark Furman. My name is Jeffrey Davis. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. We'll be right back after these messages.